Welcome to the Ask the Expert show, where the experts offer you educational information from local experts in the field of legal health, financial, and home improvement. Join us every week at this time for great educational information from lawyers, doctors, contractors, and specialists in their field. Sit back and enjoy the next hour of Ask the Experts.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ask the Experts radio show live on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. And today on the Ask the Experts show, we have Mr. Robert P. Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco. And he is your consumer protection lawyer, one of the best in the business. And we always are happy to have him on the show. Welcome to the show, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be here.
For those of the listening audience who haven't heard much about you or for the first time, tell them a little bit about yourself, just a little bit of history, and then we'll dive on into the show.
Sure. So I was born in Philadelphia, and I've been a lawyer for a little over 20 years now, and probably over half that time now I've been specializing in the area of consumer protection law, and went to school at Temple Law School, and lifelong resident of this city.
Yes, and a major Eagles fan like I guess the rest of us Philadelphians, right?
Oh yeah, I'm all ready for Sunday.
Yes, indeed. Go Birds. So, ladies and gentlemen, we know that millions of people are in debt, $13 trillion as of last year, and that's a sizable number. And the age range can go from being a 35 or under 35-year-old who could be on average of $67,000 in debt to an individual 75 years and up being at $34,500 in debt on average. So we are in debt. And so part of the reason why we wanted to be on the show today is to talk about debt and credit, and how it is affecting you, the listening audience, and how Mr. Coco here can tell you how to work through it. So, Bob, I'll start right away. A lot of folks are overwhelmed by debt problems. What's the first thing they should do to get control of the situation?
The first thing to do is to get a recent credit report that gives a picture from 30,000 feet, so to speak, of what your debt situation is. That's important for a variety of reasons. There's going to be debts that you do know about, but there's also going to be debts that you don't know about. Hmm. Credit reports are a window into the entire picture of what's happening to you. And you need to understand the big picture before you can get to the items that may be of a most immediate concern to you. And sometimes there's ones that that are not known to you that could be drastically affecting your credit profile.
Mm. Interesting. No, bankruptcy. People talk about bankruptcy and trying to control debt. And sometimes folks go into it maybe too soon, maybe not soon enough. You know, should filing bankruptcy be a person's first option to control their debt?
No, absolutely not. And unfortunately, that's most people's familiarity with consumer protection law, or their only knowledge of it is bankruptcy, which legitimately is part of consumer protection law, and it's a valuable tool for many people. But it should never be your first step. And that's why getting that credit report initially is so important, so that when I meet with a client for the first time, we look at the big picture and make sure that we use the tools that are right for them. And bankruptcy may not be the right tool, and that's for a variety of reasons. Hmm. Number one, if you're already have a bad debt profile, bankruptcy, at least in the short run, is just going to make it worse. Right? Having that added to your credit's not good. It's going to, in the long run, fix your credit issues, but in the short run, it will not. Also, it stops you very often from looking at why you're going into bankruptcy to begin with. And more specifically, what I mean is, are you in a bad situation debt-wise because of something you've done or because something's done to you?
Something's been done to you.
Hmm. And one of the big examples of that is mortgage companies wrongfully accounting. We'll talk a little bit about it later, but that's one example. Is a mortgage company maybe screwing up the reporting of your payments to them? Maybe it's a debt collector wrongfully benefit from the wrongdoing of someone else, because that's what the law provides. It punishes bad corporations by making them pay money when they do something wrong.
Hmm.
And also, when you go to a bankruptcy lawyer, you have to pay them. There's no provision in the law like there is for a personal injury attorney to work on a contingent fee basis. In other words, based on the outcome and collect money from whatever the outcome is. But my practice is akin to a personal injury lawyer's. When I sue a bad corporation, as I just said, I can collect money from them and the client doesn't have to pay me money, the consultation's free, and we can get a better idea of how best to help the person that way.
So it doesn't cost anything more or less to consult with a consumer lawyer like you unless there's a scenario like that coming through. Is that about right?
Yeah. So 90% of the time, I'm not charging my clients anything. The only exception would be potentially is if I have to defend them in a foreclosure situation or a debt collection situation. And that's usually for a modest sum, because that's usually all that the average person can bear. Hiring an attorney on an hourly or hourly basis is something usually only corporations can do. It's very expensive. So contingent fee representation is a way we even the playing field against the corporate powers.
And are you finding that there's a lot of people nowadays, and we just spoke earlier about the level of debt there is in the country. Are you finding a lot of cases where people are coming to you regarding their consumer debt at this point?
Absolutely, and it's in a variety of areas. Mortgages are a prominent one. Fixing disputes with credit reporting agencies and creditors that arise on their reports. Beating back debt collectors who are improperly or wrongfully collecting debts. Auto dealers who are ripping people off on used car loans or used car sales transactions, I should say. Auto repossessions. There's conduct that occurs during auto repossessions that would give you a cause of action. And there's also some more obscure areas, unfortunately, in consumer protection law, which may have some time to talk about also, that arises in employment situations because credit reports people are familiar with, but there's kind of a broader report that arises from that same pool of computer data on your individual profile, and that's a background check, and that arises in employment. It has all the same problems in terms of errors that can occur in a credit report, and it could stop you from getting employed. So those are all and student loans too. Unfortunately, with private student loans, there's not too much that can be done, but with federal student loans, there's recourse that people should know about.
Indeed. You spoke about mortgages. So I guess we'll tackle that one because there's again, you know, this is a nation full of homeowners and would-be homeowners. So let's say, for instance, why does an individual's mortgage company that they pay monthly payments to change so often? I mean, during the crisis of 2008, a lot of people found that mortgage company X became mortgage company Y, and mortgage company Y is coming after them with a steak knife.
Right.
And they're wondering why that is. So one of the key things is, why did they change so much? What's going on out there? What's the state of play?
Right. So it's a disconcerting thing because it's a departure from the traditional model that people used to think of. I got a loan from my bank down in the corner, and I pay them every month. And if there's a problem, I go down to my bank and figure out what's going on. But now bank loans have become investment products, and they're pooled together, and bonds are sold against the income stream that comes from interest payments. And as a result of that, they're traded, bought and sold like any other investment product, could be stocks and so forth. And that is a very disturbing thing, not only superficially because you want to know who you're dealing with all the time, but the more substantive problem that arises from that is that most of the servicing of your loan, in other words, the accounting for the payments that you make, is done by computer software. And all of these companies usually have different computer software systems. So when they buy a loan, they have to translate that data into their software system. And very often, computer problems arise. And since the people who are monitoring the software servicing are not very well trained, are usually young, very well paid.
But that's not a knock to millennials, though, are there?
No, it's not. It's not a knock on the people who are doing it. It's a knock on the companies that are not spending enough to hire competent people or to train competent people and compensate them adequately to do a good job in monitoring your mortgage payments.
Bob, you just said something very interesting. You're telling me that a vast majority of the mortgages out there and you're engaging it as a homeowner is determined by a computer.
Yes. Most of our lives behind the scenes right now are being governed by computers. And it's not really a big revelation. When you stop and think about it, it's kind of obvious, right? I mean, everything from the electrical grid comes up in the news every once in a while as being hacked, right? Your credit reports assembled by computer data. And it's no different, unfortunately, with mortgage servicing. That information's all being collated by a computer. And that's okay as long as, again, it's being monitored properly. But the problem is it's often not. And so when your payments are going from one company to another, sometimes that transition, they miss two payments or three payments. And all of a sudden, you're in default. But you're not really in default. You've been making your payments.
Right.
And if that leads to a situation where you're going to be in foreclosure and now you say, oh, my God, I have to file bankruptcy. Well, why did you do all that? You should be fighting back against that mortgage company, not allowing them to not only make a mistake in the accounting, but to force you into foreclosure, bankruptcy. You're just digging a hole deeper. Nice. And that's why I like to talk to people and make sure that there isn't an avenue that we can pursue to get them redressed for these issues rather than having them driven deeper into a bad situation.
And also being somewhat of a monitor. So when one mortgage company changes to another, you really kind of hope and pray that their computers talk to each other as well.
And there's a very good chance they're not.
So, you know, even though this sounds like an oversimplified question, it's a very important one. What does it mean to be in foreclosure?
Yeah, actually, that's a very important issue that's widely misunderstood. I very often will get calls from people saying, I'm in foreclosure. My house is going to be sold tomorrow. Well, what that means is you've been in foreclosure, which is a process, for probably a year, maybe even 2 years, maybe 3 years, right? So that's the thing to understand. Foreclosure is a process. And that process, if you engage in it, right, if you ignore it, you're gonna hurt yourself. But if you engage in it and pay attention to the notices you receive and the documents you receive, you can make it work for you. So in Philadelphia, for example, or in Pennsylvania generally, the bank has to sue you, right? They have to file a complaint against you saying ABC Bank versus Joe Smith. Mm-hmm. And then that document has to be served on you, either by a sheriff or a private individual, or the bank can get permission to serve you by mail. And then once you get that document, in Philadelphia, you don't have to respond to it and hire a lawyer. You can go into something called a conciliation program, where they try to get the banks and the borrowers together and see if they can work something out. And that's a process that could play out over months' time. And the good thing about that is that you may be able to work it out. But if you don't, in the meantime, it's great if you can talk to your housing counselor and get the situation worked out. But you should also be planning, have a plan B, which is if this doesn't work, then you do have to get a lawyer. Because if you don't, they're going to take a judgment against you. And after they take a judgment, that's when they can go to a sheriff's sale and sell your home to pay off the debt. So you want to be proactive and monitor that process at every stage of the game. Before a foreclosure can be filed in Pennsylvania, they have to send you a notice.
How many days do you have to respond?
To respond to the complaint, you have 20 days, and then there's a 10-day default period. So you have 30 days to respond to the complaint if you're going to file an answer.
Okay.
But in pre-foreclosure, before the foreclosure complaint, you'll get a 30-day notice that they intend to foreclose, and then they have to send you another notice and give you notice of your rights. You can apply for an emergency loan, for example, from the HMAP program in Pennsylvania to catch up your arrears, and that's another 30-day period. Mm. So you have plenty of time to work with. The important thing is that you plan and are responsive to all these periods so they don't get away from you and you don't find yourself in a situation where you have to respond quickly and maybe not effectively to best serve your individual interests.
Indeed. That is greatly appreciated. Well, I see that we might want to take a break here. So we're talking, ladies and gentlemen, to Mr. Bob Coco of the law offices of Robert P. Coco. He is your consumer protection lawyer. And you're listening to the Ask the Experts radio show live here on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. These laws include the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Fair Credit Reporting Act, and Pennsylvania's Consumer Protection Law. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone, at home, or at work. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back, and thank you for listening with us. I'm your host, Maurice Goodman, and you're listening to the Ask the Experts show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. And today we're talking to Mr. Robert P. Coco. I call him Bob. He's a good gentleman here. He's your consumer protection lawyer. He's of the law offices of Robert P. Coco, PC. And we were talking a bit about mortgages and all of that. But before we dive into that, ladies and gentlemen, if you got any questions, please feel free to call in. The number is 888-728-9941. That's 888-728-9941. Bob here is more than happy to answer any questions that you might have. But while we're waiting for you all to call in, we'll keep on going with the show and ask a key question about mortgages and foreclosures. What defenses does an individual have after being sued in foreclosure? We were talking about that earlier, but now let's do a deep dive on it a bit.
Yeah, so that's a big topic. But one thing I want to point out in the time we have that's not, once again, widely understood enough is that if you have an FHA loan or you're a veteran and you have a VA loan, you have special protections that federal law gives you if you do go into default. And sometimes the default is going to be not caused by a bank or some other party, but you may have had a medical condition, lost your job, and legitimately have stopped paying your mortgage, and now you have to catch up. So if you have one of those two types of government loans, you have a very powerful defense to that. And the reason is that when a private bank makes one of those loans, they're guaranteed by the HUD insurance fund. So they can make a claim on that fund for the amount of the default and be made whole. And in return for that, they have to help you get back on your feet. And so there's three remedies you have under that as long as you're currently able to make your mortgage payment, your monthly mortgage payment, which may include principal, interest, and escrow for tax and insurance, then they have to offer you one of those three remedies, which are briefly modifying your loan, something called a partial claim, but all that means is that whatever your default arrears, however much you owe, it's put on the end of the loan, and the bank gets reimbursed for that. Or they can put you in a forbearance program where you pay your regular monthly payment and you pay a little bit every month until you pay off the amount that you owe them. And if it's a smaller amount, that may be the way to go. But they have to offer you those things. Mm. The problem is the banks very often will not do that voluntarily unless you raise that defense and force them to look at your loan, not as a conventional loan, but for what it is, then they will just proceed on a normal course. So it's very important, once again, don't represent yourself in a foreclosure. The conciliation process is fine if you can get a result, but you always have to expect that. And again, consultation with me is free. So I'm happy to talk to people while they're in the conciliation program. If I can give them advice that'll help them get through it, it doesn't result in any payment to me, I'm fine with that. But always educate yourself as much as possible. Work with what you have, with who you have, like a housing counselor, but don't trust them to be your only resource. Ultimately, you have to get legal advice that's going to be useful for you and your individual situation.
What's the bitter end of the individual trying to deal with this and then getting to you, and then you have to pick up that phone and highly encourage a company to work with your client?
Well, very often, if not 99% of the time, making phone calls won't solve almost any of these consumer protection disputes. Mm. The only thing that, unfortunately, in one sense, I guess you could say it's unfortunate, it works is either filing a responsive legal pleading or filing your own complaint against the parties that are doing something bad to you. That's what's understood. Letter writing tends to be ignored. There is a valuable role for letter writing to set the stage for litigation. And I guess we'll talk about that next when we talk about credit disputes, because the letter writing is valuable to set the stage for litigation. In fact, you can't do it without it sometimes.
Well, with that segue, so we'll dive right into credit repair and disputes. So how does one remove negative information from the credit report? That's a big question. A lot of people are facing that one.
Yeah, very, very big question. And once again, something that's very, unfortunately, very widely misunderstood about how to do it in the most effective way. So the easy ways to do it, and I guess it's like a lot of things in life, the easy way isn't necessarily the best way. So all the credit reporting agencies, Experian, Equifax, TransUnion, have electronic portals that you can make disputes through. So it's easy, right? And you can call and make disputes. But the problem with those ways is that an effective dispute is providing documentary evidence to the credit reporting agency and to the furnisher of the information, who's the creditor, right, the person who's maybe lending you money or something, is to prove the situation by documents, right? You could say anything you want in a letter. It doesn't mean it's true, right? It's only true if you have proof of it.
Right.
And the reason why that's – and so what you have to do is you have to send a letter. You have to send a certified letter. A lot of us aren't really used to sending letters anymore, right? There's so much electronic communication, but the old-fashioned way works best. You have to send it to either all three credit reporting agencies, or if you know for a fact that only one, two are reporting a certain item you want to dispute, send it to them. And then you send a copy of that letter with all the attachments and something to prove your identity, a driver's license, a utility bill, or both. And you send that package to them. And then they have 30 days to respond, and they can, what they call, verify the information or say, no, you're wrong, creditor's right. Or they can change it. If they change it, your job's done. You've effectively disputed the item. If it's not, the important thing is that if you've written this letter, they're required to conduct a reasonable reinvestigation based on your letter. Now, if you gave them the information and they say all they did was ask the creditor whether he's right and you're wrong, and he said, and the creditor says, no, they're wrong, but didn't provide any proof and no investigation was conducted, which 99% of the time no investigation is conducted, then you can sue. And not only can you sue then, but you'll have an effective lawsuit because you can credibly say, hey, they didn't do what the law requires and investigate my dispute. They just parroted the information, right? They just repeated back the information. That's not an investigation. So then you can sue them and get damages as well as fix the credit item.
Interesting. Now, what might be common mistakes, might be hiccups that an individual person might make in not getting that opportunity to sue if the other side doesn't get the job done to where they're supposed to?
Right. So I'm glad you pointed that out. The biggest problem, even if someone does what I just outlined in terms of a letter writing and attachment of proof, very often they'll just send it to the creditor, right? So if I'm having a dispute with my credit card company and they're making a mistake reporting me late on my credit, and I'm not, and I show them my bank account statements, I can't sue them under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. I have to give notice to the credit reporting agencies as well as the creditor. And then if you do that and everybody doesn't do what they're supposed to do, then you can sue them all. But you can't. You're just going to have to write another dispute if you just give the creditor notice.
Interesting. Yep. Interesting. So how does one go about getting a credit report? I mean, we talk about the big three. They are, Equifax, Experian, TransUnion, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Well, there's others, but those are the big three, yep.
Those are the key three. How does one go about getting it for free?
Yes. There's a website that's been set up between the FTC and the credit reporting agencies. But you don't have to just use the website. You can also call, and this information is on all of the big three websites if you don't remember this information or write it down here. But there's a website, and it's called www.annualcreditreport.com. And once per year, you can get your credit report from each of the big three credit reporting agencies we just mentioned. And if you stagger out those requests in a year, even if you don't have a dispute but just want to monitor your credit, you don't have to pay for credit monitoring. It's something if you have the resources and you want that peace of mind, you can do that. But you can monitor your credit for free by just getting one of those every 4 months. And you're also, I should point out, I'm sorry,
yes,
Maurice, you can also get a free credit report in certain factual situations. So if you've been denied credit, if you've been denied insurance, you're entitled by law to get a free copy of your report. If you're required to pay a higher deposit, say for a utility company, pay a higher interest rate, or if you're required to have a cosigner on a loan, in all those situations, you're entitled free for a credit report. You can call and ask for one or write and ask for one.
Appreciate that. Now, what can I do if my credit dispute with the credit reporting agencies isn't successful?
Right. So we were starting to talk about that. So that's when the I in fact did talk about it a little bit, which is that if the dispute doesn't work, you have to proceed to litigation. Mm-hmm. And once again, this is contingent fee litigation. You don't pay me to file the lawsuit. And very often I help people write the letters so that they're effective. And I don't do that. I don't charge people to do that. And then once you do that, you can sue and get money damages as well as getting the information corrected. So there's a floor for damages, right? There's $1,000 statutory damages. Mm. Unfortunately, these laws now are you know, maybe 30, 40, 50 years old in some cases when we're talking about consumer protection laws. Mm. So the money damages haven't been increased. Mm. But for example, in a situation where you've made a dispute and then you've had your credit denied, that increases the value of your case because you've been harmed in a very tangible fashion. Then you're entitled to punitive damages. They should, in other words, punish them for their actions. And you know, again, you're entitled to your legal fees and costs like you are with most consumer protection laws. So you don't have to worry about whether the corporation has more money to spend on the lawsuit than you do.
Mm. Side item. You mentioned that some of the laws on the books are very, very old. Is there any kind of credit reform going on? I mean, we know that there's the Consumer Protection Agency that was brought on during the Obama administration, but has there been, and is that agency going about the business of trying to reform credit reporting to your knowledge?
There hasn't been any reform to the credit law since around 2005. There was also a reform of the bankruptcy law to some extent.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we just haven't been in an environment for some time where the common man's issues are being addressed. Al Franken, several years ago, tried to raise the statutory damage for a Fair Debt Collection Practices Act claim from $1,000 to $4,000 for a violation, but that wasn't successful. Mm-hmm. And the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau was effective at monitoring and suing a variety of bad actors in the corporate sector for a breach of consumer laws, but under the Trump administration, it's been neutralized to a great extent by the parties have been, or the persons who have been put in charge of it. Mm-hmm. So that's bad news for the general public, but I guess in some ways good news for private attorneys like myself, because now we're
busy,
have to pick up the slack that was being taken by them.
Fascinating. So what are the common errors in credit reports, to come back to the issue?
Sure. So misreporting just factually what's happened, right? You're late, you are, that you paid off a debt and it's not showing it's paid off, right? Mm. But there's also situations where it's not your debt at all. Mm. And, you know, going back again with software creating a lot of the information about us these days, if you have a very common name, you can be confused with somebody else, and you can be confused with some their bad actions too, right? And that could arise in a variety of contexts, not just credit. But
John Smith, right?
Right. Oh, yes. If you have any kind of common name, it could be a big problem for you. It's something called a mixed file, but it's also ID theft causes this too, right? Mm. Which once again, you have to really guard your information online. Bankruptcy, if you do go into bankruptcy, a very common problem is that you emerge from bankruptcy and you've taken care of your debts, but unfortunately your credit report doesn't show that. So you want to make sure that all your debts are shown as discharged, zero balance if you completed the bankruptcy, right, and you've gotten a discharge. In mortgages, you want to, some of the same concerns you have with credit cards, you want to make sure that you're not shown as late if you aren't. And if you've sold your home and under a short sale scenario, and they've agreed to waive the balance of the loan if they don't get everything they're owed, then you want to also make sure that that's shown as zeroed out.
Mm, indeed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Mr. Bob Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco. We're going to take a break right now, and you're listening to the Ask the Experts radio show live on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. We're going to take a break right now.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. These laws include the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Fair Credit Reporting Act, and Pennsylvania's Consumer Protection Law. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone, at home, or at work. Let the Law Offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. I'm your host, Maurice Goodman, and you're listening to the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN, and we greatly appreciate you being on the show with us today. We're talking to Mr. Bob Coco of the Law Offices of Robert P. Coco, PC. He is your consumer protection lawyer. He's one of the best in the business, and we wanted to make sure you got on the show and you got to listen to what he had to say. But before we get into the next round of questioning, we really want, just Bob, could you tell folks how they can get in touch with you, reach out to you?
Yes, sure. So my phone number is 215-351-0200. And I have a website, and it's www.phillyconsumerlaw.com. Although I practice law outside of Philadelphia, but that's...
Right. It's not just in Philadelphia.
Not just in Philadelphia.
He's anywhere you need him to be. And if you have any questions for him, feel free to call us here at this number, 888-728-9941. That's 888-728-9941. So, Bob, we were talking about still consumer credit, among other things, and one of the key questions that a lot of individuals out there have is, what should they do if they are victims of ID theft?
Yes, so unfortunately, it's a very common problem these days. But what you can do to combat it is, once again, fairly simple. You have to report it to the police. Call 911. 911 is not just for emergency calls anymore. Mm. Get a police officer, and you know, whatever jurisdiction has happened in, and report it. And the importance of it is not so much that the police are going to solve it, because solving electronic crimes is very, very difficult. But it is going to be, once again, evidence, which we talked about, that you can submit to the credit reporting agency and support your credibility that this actually occurred, so that you can dispute and fix items on your credit report that arise from ID theft. And you can also put a freeze on your credit file by calling the credit reporting agencies. And there's a $5 to $10 charge. Sometimes they may be waiving it now these days, but that's something that is easily done. Now, of course, if you want to get a loan while your credit's frozen, you're going to have to lift it so they can pull credit. So it's going to be somewhat of a inconvenience, but it's better than someone stealing your information and trashing your credit.
Indeed, indeed. And that is a segue, because then if you are a victim of ID theft, or if you're having bad credit, you are worried from an employment standpoint, your future job, your current job. So does debt or credit affect a person's chances of getting hired for a job?
It certainly can. It's certainly not for all employment situations, but there's two major areas of employment that are very much affected by those situations. And that's law enforcement and finance. Mm. Law enforcement, bad credit can make a job applicant susceptible to bribery, corruption. So that's why they don't want it to be an influencing factor.
Certainly.
And in finance, it's hard to sell someone to manage your money if you can't manage your own finances. And the employer's not going to be very convinced you're going to be good at it either. And you also could steal from clients. It's also a corruption issue, too. So in those two areas, it's very important that your credit reflects the realities of your situation and not mistakes or errors.
So if you plan on being a police officer or a stockbroker, get your act in gear from your financial standpoint.
Right. And you know, again, you may legitimately believe that everything's in order, but you haven't looked at your credit report in a while. And there's all kinds of things that could happen, some of which we talked about, like just the company's confusing you with someone else, that could cause problems. So you want to make sure before you dive in, even if you've been a model citizen controlled your finances well, that something's not happening behind the scenes that's not your fault.
So can an employer run a credit report or a background check without my permission, let's say?
No. They have to get permission to do so. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned a background check, which is common, very common now in employment situations. I think it's something like 70-something percent of employers will run a background check. Yeah, for a variety of reasons. For liability reasons,
okay.
They don't want to be sued if they hire the wrong person for the job that may have a history that they should have known about and mm-hmm. which would impact the job duties. And also, they just want to make sure that you're telling the truth, too, when you fill out an application and you're saying who you are and you've done what you've done. But these background checks, since very few people actually see them, don't understand what their legal rights are with regards to them. And they are governed by consumer protection laws, one of which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act we just talked about. But in Pennsylvania, we have a state law, too, that governs some of the issues. And so what a background check is, just so the listening audience is clear, it will look very much like a credit report if you see it in terms of being compartmentalized the same way. But it includes much more information. Mm-hmm. It includes your employment history. It will include your educational history. It'll include your criminal history, which we'll talk about in a minute. It's very important. Mm. And driving history, too. And it'll have an historical record of those informations. But unfortunately, it can have all of the same errors that you encounter when you get a credit report.
Mm. Now, can an employer, is the employer required to disclose a job applicant to the job applicant what is revealed in that report?
They are if they don't hire you, or if they ran the background check and then fired you as a result of what was found in the background check results.
So let's say you get hired, and then the background check comes back a few days after you've been hired, turns out it's not too favorable, they can fire you.
Yes, they can, but this is where we have to make sure that people understand how that process works, because it is a legal process that has to work in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So if they hire you on probationary basis, maybe you have to undergo training and so forth. And usually you have to wait for drug screen results to come back for a lot of jobs. And if they run the background check
mm-hmm.
and decide not to hire you, they can't just say, we got the background check back, there's bad results in it, we're not hiring you. No. What they have to do is say, we've gotten the background check, there's areas of concern, here's a copy of the background check. And if you dispute that information or any information in there, you have to have at least 5 days to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of it's one of those situations where the law dovetails with the common sense notion of fairness, right? If there's something that's an error, then you should be able to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And the process is that the employer is usually getting this information from a third-party company. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be one of the big three credit reporting agencies or one of the companies that they own. Could be a LexisNexis. There's a variety of companies that issue these reports, HireRight. And they will have a dispute process, just like you have a dispute process with a credit reporting agency, very much the same.
Mm-hmm.
If you have evidence to show that, for example, you're not the John Smith that robbed the bank 5 years ago, in fact, you have no criminal history.
But yet you're John Smith.
Right. You could show that, and then there'll be identifying factors that are different. Your social security number, your address, your whatever, your race, right? I had situations where people were confused with residents of other states, different ethnic background, but same name, and sometimes serious criminal charges, but has nothing to do with them except for the name confusion.
Mm.
Even the middle name is different. But again, computers are collating this information. You can't trust the computers. You have to give human beings an opportunity to say there's a problem.
Right.
And it's very important because, especially with criminal histories, which we'll talk about a little bit more, these inaccuracies can very commonly arise.
So let's say if the information's inaccurate, I mean, can I dispute it like I would a credit report?
Ever? Right, right. So that's exactly, it bears repeating that. It's the same kind of dispute process, and that the company that is pulling the credit, the background check for the employer under the law also must notify you that it's being pulled.
Mm.
And that not only notifies you that it's being pulled, but it tells you who's doing it so that you can go back to them and find out what's going on.
Well, that's a key piece. I mean, you can know who's checking. And
exactly.
Okay.
It should be a transparent process.
Should be transparent. That's appreciated. Now, what are the common problems that a job applicant has with background checks?
So the problems can arise in any of these areas we just talked about, mm-hmm. like credit. I've represented a person one time who was going to be driving a bus, and a driving history came up for her. She had her last name happened to be Smith, and there's a driving history and for someone of her name in North Carolina with lots of moving violations. But it wasn't her. She never lived in North Carolina.
Okay.
So that's a problem. Something that's and it's very topical for a lot of reasons and legitimately so is criminal histories.
Mm.
And it's not just always errors, which we've just talked about. Sometimes it's just completely erroneous. But someone may indeed have a criminal history, but that should not necessarily be a bar to their gaining employment, mm-hmm. right? Ideally, we would all want to have people make mistakes and then reintegrate into society and be productive members of society.
Certainly.
And there's laws that help that process happen. In Pennsylvania, there's something called the Criminal History Records and Information Act.
Mm.
And basically what that law says is that if you're going to not hire someone based on their criminal history, you have to show that there's a reasonable relationship between the offense and the job duties you're hiring them for, right?
Mm.
So if someone has a drug possession charge in their past and you're going to hire them for a warehouse job, well, there's really, you can make a very good argument, there's no relationship between the two.
Mm.
Whereas, for example, if someone stole from a job and stole merchandise from where they were working, well, then you could say, well, I don't want somebody who's going to steal some stuff from my warehouse, right?
Hmm.
So there's no bright line tests, but you can't reflexively as an employer just say, oh, criminal history, that's, forget it, I'm not hiring the person. In fact, you also have to, in Philadelphia, not even raise the issue or consult a criminal history until after the interview's taken place, so that the applicant has the best chance possible under our ban the box law in Philadelphia, that they have the best opportunity possible to make a showing that they're qualified for the job and could be a good employee.
Now, do you represent people in these situations for free as well?
Yes, absolutely. Although the Criminal History Records Information Act doesn't provide specifically for attorney's fees, it's still a contingent fee representation, a percentage of recovery sort of representation, just like you would be in a personal injury case.
Mm.
So, yep, no bar to in that regard.
No bar to that either.
And so, I should point out just briefly, too,
sure.
as far as criminal history, that summary offenses in our state can't be considered for purposes of employment. So a summary offense is very often something that just results in a fine. It could result in incarceration, but very, very rarely does. I mean, the most benign type of summary offense would be like littering, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pay so much money. But, you know, I've had clients who, you know, 18 years old jumped a turnstile at SEPTA, but
okay.
SEPTA prosecuted them and they got a summary offense.
Huh.
And, you know, if the employer is going to say reflexively, no criminal history, that person didn't get hired for type of job where something like that really shouldn't have affected them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a concern, especially in the inner cities, you know, where criminal histories, unfortunately, and in our state, there's a lot of progressive people who are bringing attention to the problem and helping to expunge these records. Malcolm Jenkins of the Eagles is one of them. But, you know, it's still an issue, and it really has to be patrolled, and job applicants should be given a fair shot.
Indeed. That's greatly appreciated. You know what? We're going to take a quick break right now, and ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Mr. Bob Coco, who is your consumer protection lawyer of the law offices of Robert P. Coco. You are listening to the Ask the Experts radio show live here on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia.
Did you know that one way to manage your debt is to sue creditors or debt collectors who have defrauded or abused you? Most Americans are carrying historically high levels of consumer debt, and when they can't manage it any longer, they often file bankruptcy. But if you don't owe some or all of a debt, or a debt collector is abusing you, you can fight back. State and federal consumer laws allow you to defend against and sue abusive corporations for money damages. These laws include the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, Fair Credit Reporting Act, and Pennsylvania's Consumer Protection Law. These laws often force the corporations to pay your attorney fees and costs if you are successful. Some common debt disputes are your mortgage company threatening foreclosure for amounts paid or not owed, paying for a bad used car, including certified pre-owned cars, credit reports showing inaccurate reporting of debts, debt collectors yelling, insulting, or harassing you on the phone, at home, or at work. Let the law offices of Robert Coco PC defend your rights. Attorney Coco handles auto dealer fraud, illegal background checks for employees, credit report disputes, mortgage abuse, and wrongful foreclosures. Stop worrying today and contact Attorney Robert Coco PC at 215-351-0200. That's 215-351-0200.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back and we greatly appreciate you being here with us. I'm your host, Maurice Goodman, and you are listening to the Ask the Experts radio show here on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. Go Birds. We're talking to Mr. Robert P. Coco of the law offices of the same. He is your consumer protection lawyer. Bob, appreciate your time here. We'll just keep it going until the end of the show because you've got some very strong information. And ladies and gentlemen, if you've got any questions for him, you can still reach him. He's at 888-728-9941. That's 888-728-9941 if you want to call him while he's here in the studio. In the meantime, we'll pick up on auto repossession, which is a fascinating thing in a town like this where everybody seems to drive and they have bills to pay on top of their cars, sometimes problems arise. So what does one do if they find a tow company repossessing their car because they missed a payment?
Right. So there was a popular cable show for a while, too, called Parking Wars. And I don't think anybody has the illusion that the tow truck operators are, you know, very genteel people. They tend to be, it's a tough job, right? So in fairness to them, whenever you're confronting people in bad financial situations, even legitimately, it could be a very stressful and can cause you to act in ways that are not optimal for your personality. But at any rate, when a tow company repossesses your car because you're behind on payments, like everything we've been discussing here today, the law expects them to act in a certain way, in a certain responsible way, and not just do whatever they can to, in this case, repossess your car. So if the car is not already hooked up or if it's on a flatbed, the law will recognize that the repossession is pretty much over at that point. And even if they haven't driven away from your location, then the repossession is complete. And there's really not much you can do as a consumer, assuming, again, that you are legitimately behind. Obviously, any time where your creditor or the finance company bank has made a mistake, then you're always going to have a claim.
Indeed.
Right? But what we're talking about here is if you're confronting the repossessor during the repossession while it's happening. So before they've actually hooked your car, you are entitled to tell them to stop.
Okay.
And you're entitled to tell them to leave.
If you witness it while it's happening.
If you witness it while it's happening. And if you can, because we don't know what's going to happen while this process is ongoing, you should try to film it with your cell phone.
Right, because these repossessors of these tow trucks can get right gnarly.
Yes, they can. Sometimes they will be carrying guns.
Right.
Sometimes they can legally carry a gun. It doesn't mean they can show it to you or threaten you with it.
Okay.
Right? Because a repossession is an inherently volatile activity that can result in violence, right? And it could disturb the neighborhood also. They're very, very often they have lights on the cars, they're backing up, and they're noisily. So anything that causes a neighborhood disturbance, there's a term of art in the law called breach of the peace. So if the repossessor breaches the peace while conducting repossession, that is a violation of state law. and you're entitled to prevent it. That's why you can tell them to stop and go away, especially if they're on your property, because now they're potentially trespassing on your property if you tell them to discontinue an activity and they ignore you. Okay, and sometimes they will. Sometimes they'll get it very aggressive, like you just said, and they're not entitled to. They're also not entitled to, and this is, again, something popularly misunderstood, they're not entitled to invite the police to help them with the repossession. They very often will report the repossession in advance to the police, right, so that they'll alert the police that the car is not being stolen. Right? That's helpful.
Okay.
But the police are not permitted to help them in a repossession that's breaching the peace.
In effect, do guard duty while the repossessor takes your car.
Yes. And this is, unfortunately, the police most police forces are not very well trained in this regard. And I'm not trying to say that the police will, come here and actively do something bad to the consumer or be a criticism of the police generally. No, it's just the fact that they don't really understand what the law requires in this regard, and they'll just try to have the consumer stand down and let it happen so that no further disturbance is caused. But that actually is a exacerbation of the disturbance. And it's not an alleviation of the situation.
It certainly doesn't sound like it would make it any more helpful. Have you found situations where you've had clients reach out to you where the repossession situation got out of hand?
Yes.
And then police was involved, maybe during or after the fact, and you had to be called to the table to deal with it.
Yes, so there's various situations that can occur. I mentioned offhandedly that some of these repossessors will carry a gun, but we've had situations where the consumer confronts them, and not confronts them yelling and screaming like maniacs, but just say, look, hey, I just made a payment, or whatever the situation is, explain it to them, and the repossessor will expose the gun they're carrying to them. Well, they can't do that. They can't do that. They can't yell back at you. They can't say, get out of the way, open up this car, give me the keys, shut up. Right? They can't do any of those things. They have to treat you respectfully. That's why so many times the repossessions are conducted at night when no one's around to avoid all these situations. So the bar isn't very high for their conduct to violate the law that governs unlawful repossessions. And you should always feel emboldened to protect the property and protect yourself in these situations. But absolutely, sometimes they'll even put their hands on people. And not only is that a breach of the peace, but that's an assault.
Right, now you're at assault stage.
Right, so there could be various things that happen depending on how much they want to escalate it.
Fascinating.
And you want to protect yourself against that.
Indeed. Now, is an individual entitled to reinstate their car loan if they're in default and their car is repossessed?
So Pennsylvania is not a redemption state. They can require you to pay the full balance. But sometimes the finance companies will work with you. And if you're falling behind on a loan, you should always try to get relief from them in advance rather than fall behind and think, well, I'm only a day behind. A day behind is enough for them to take the car. So if you can put a payment or two payments on the end of the loan by agreement with them in writing or confirmed by an email, it could be done in various ways, you should always try to do that to avoid the issue, because if they do take it, they could require you to pay the entire balance of the contract, and that's very often not a realistic option for a lot of people.
How about this one? Should an individual voluntarily return their car to the bank if they can't make the payment or the financing for it?
No, that's always a bad idea if it could be avoided. And what we've just discussed is one of the ways to avoid it, try to preempt the issue ahead of time. Now, of course, you could file a bankruptcy too, but I always would hate to see someone file a bankruptcy just because of a car loan. But everyone's individual situation is different. If your car, you're a salesman, and you can't make money without your car, then that could be a legitimate reason to file a bankruptcy to protect it. But if you do return it, it's still a repossession. It's called a voluntary repossession, but the effect on your credit is still just as negative as any other black marker in your credit, like a foreclosure, a bankruptcy, repossession. They're the worst things that could happen to your credit. So you want to avoid that wherever possible.
That's appreciated. You know, I see we're up against a TikTok here. So if you would, Bob, could you please just give us your phone number, your web address again, and tell your listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Sure. So again, my consultations are free. Very often my representation is free to the consumer. My phone number is 215-351-0200. My web address is www.phillyconsumerlaw.com. And you can see and hear interviews I've given on a lot of these topics and educate yourself further.
You know, and that leads me to a question, my final question, even though we're getting up against it, is do you do seminars? Are you on YouTube? Are you in a space where you can educate people about their consumer protection? What's the value of that education, you think?
Yeah, I always like to be able to give free talks to people directly. So I've given them, especially to when the foreclosure crisis was at its height, I would go to churches, I would appear where local politicians would ask me to appear before their constituents at arranged meetings. So I'm always happy to go and talk for free and kind of spread the gospel of consumer protection law, because it isn't as widely understood as a lot of other legal rights that people are aware that they have. They're aware that they could get a criminal defense attorney if they're charged with a crime, or that they can get a personal injury attorney if they're in a car accident, but they don't know sufficiently what they can do when they're faced with debt issues and other consumer-related issues.
Indeed. Greatly appreciate that. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Mr. Robert P. Coco of the law offices of the same name. He is your consumer protection lawyer. I'd want to thank you for your time. Thank you, Mr. Michael Vito, our sound engineer for the day. I'm Maurice Goodman, and you've been listening to the Ask the Experts radio show on 610 ESPN in Philadelphia. We'll see you next week. Have a great day.